You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The world's weakest states aren't just a danger to themselves. They can disrupt the stability of countries halfway across the world. The nonprofit research group, the Fund for Peace, and Foreign Policy magazine recently released their third annual Failed States Index. On today's Underreported, we will find out what a failed state is, where the worst ones are, and how instability spreads from one country to another. With me now is Pauline H. Baker, president of the Fund for Peace. She has more than 40 years of experience working on issues concerning weak and failing states, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hello.
Hello.
What is your definition of a failed state?
There's no common consensus on this question. There are a lot of people who define it in different ways, but what the consensus does have is agreement on certain features of weak and failing states, and that includes the lack of physical control over a territory, the lack of a monopoly on the use of force, the inability to provide public services to its citizens, often an inability to function in the international community, and several other features like that.
What about things that you can't measure with statistics, like fear or despair?
Well, what we've done is identify 12 indicators of instability, internal instability, and they include both quantitative and qualitative indicators. So, for example, one of our indicators is delegitimization of the state. And the way we measure that is through sub-indicators or measures that look at things like rigged elections, military coups, the frequency of military coups, the extent of corruption in a country, and things like that, which basically undermine the confidence of the people in its government.
Is there a difference between a weak state and a failed state? Can a failed state be failed according to the index but strong in other ways?
We look at it as a continuum, so that basically what we're measuring is the risk of failure, the risk of internal conflict. Also, you can have a strongman state, for example, which is different from a strong state. Strongman state, obviously, is, all the power is concentrated at the top, and once you get rid of that leader or he leaves, the state can be quite unstable. A strong state refers to states which have the institutional capacity to solve their own problems peacefully without an outside military or administrative presence, so that if a country does face certain crises, they can do it. There's political succession in a peaceful way, et cetera, and not every issue becomes a threat to the existence of the state itself or a threat to civilians. So we really look at this on a continuum, and yes, you can have a failing state that can be strong in other ways. For example, North Korea is really a failing state, if not already a failed state by some definitions, and yet it's got a great deal of strength in terms of its nuclear capacity.
Is there a line that gets crossed between failing and failed?
Not a sharp one. It's a very fuzzy one. For example, many people could say Zimbabwe today is a failed state because its economy is in shambles. There's no political legitimacy in the country, and people are starving as a result of Robert Mugabe's policies, but you don't have the widespread open fighting and violence and atrocities. Nonetheless, people are dying, and the state is not fulfilling its purpose.
Where are the world's most failed states right now? Can you give us the top five, or should I say the bottom five?
Yeah, in our scale, the number one is bad. Number one is really the most unstable state or the weakest state, and that is Sudan. And it's been number one in this index for 2 years in a row, driven mainly by Darfur and the problems taking place there. But they have institutional weaknesses as well, and they have other rebellions and other moves for autonomy in the rest of the country.
And yet al-Bashir seems to be pretty secure in his position of power.
Yes, mainly because of oil, which is giving him a lot of clout, and because of the controls of the state.
And number two is Iraq?
Number two is Iraq. Iraq was number four last year. It's moved up, which means the situation has gotten worse.
Now, you've only been doing this index for 3 years, but do you think Iraq would have been in the top five before 2003?
Probably the top 10. We are doing a series of studies on Iraq, and we started out with a baseline before the invasion, and we were surprised to discover how weak it had really become, mainly because of misrule by Saddam Hussein and the strain on the economy and the impact of sanctions. So basically, when the UN invaded, they were invading a failing state or a very weak state, which is why, because there wasn't a real plan, a post-invasion plan, everything fell apart.
Ironically, it was described as a much stronger state.
Correct.
Before the invasion.
That was part of the bad intelligence.
I don't imagine that the United States rates very high in your failed state index. Are there any countries that are doing better?
There are a lot of countries that are doing better. In fact, one of the interesting things in this year's index is how well Liberia has done. They showed the greatest improvement between last year and this year. And contrast it with a country like Lebanon, which rates about the same in this year's snapshot of where states are, but is on a different trajectory. So Lebanon is on the way down, Liberia is on the way up. So one of the interesting things is to compare how countries fare over time. And as I said, Liberia got the gold star this year.
So this is something that can obviously be reversed fairly quickly if the right things are done.
Especially in a weak state, yes, because they don't have the capacity to really cope with internal crises.
But more often than not, I'm thinking of Ethiopia, for example, there are improvements, but they're not complete improvements.
Yes,
Kenya is another case.
Right, and also weak and failing states are a very diverse universe of countries. They could rank almost the same but be very different, like I use the example of Liberia and Lebanon. And even though we have actually the breakdowns by indicator, so you can actually see where the improvements are coming. It could be in the social area, it could be the economic area, it could be the political military area, and every country is different.
My guest is Pauline H. Baker, president of the Fund for Peace. Her organization and Foreign Policy Magazine have put together their third annual Failed States Index. It's in the current issue of Foreign Policy Magazine. The index found that the world's weakest states are also the most religiously intolerant.
Yes, that was an interesting correlation. We also found an interesting correlation between corruption and weak and failing states. One of the surprising things in previous studies that we've done is we did not find a correlation between weak and failing states and military expenditures. The common view is that a lot of these weak and failing states spend their money on military. But in fact, that was all over the map. And like the United States has the highest military budget in the world, and yet it's fairly stable. So that was not a correlation, although clearly there are a lot of countries which misspend the money that they're earning.
Is it true that Ireland turns out to be the most religiously tolerant?
Which one?
Ireland.
If that's on the map, yes. I haven't got the in front of me, but if that's, yeah, that is.
Because that would have been a turnaround as well.
Yes, yes.
I guess it should come as no surprise that the index also found that having a brutal leader is an indicator. But you mentioned some of the states where there had been a brutal leader and then suddenly there's a vacuum of power, Iraq being one, Somalia being another one.
Yes, they had a very brutal leader, repressive leader, in Somalia, and when he left in 91, the state just collapsed, and basically it's a clan-driven structure, power structure, and sub-clans, and they're constantly aligning and realigning. We haven't had any stability there, and now are in even a worse situation now, because there was a takeover by an Islamic group, very small Islamic group, and brought some law and order and repression to Mogadishu, but Ethiopia invaded and a transitional government has now been installed, and Somalia, unfortunately, is facing a kind of a mini version of what we're facing in Iraq, which is an insurgency now that is being contained by a foreign power.
Now, in a case like Afghanistan, where the Taliban brought stability to the country, would it have actually ranked higher than it has since the fall of Taliban, even though the Taliban was repressive, much more repressive than the situation is today?
That's difficult to say, because under the Taliban, they would have scored badly in terms of human rights, in terms of political legitimacy. in terms of the security apparatus, factionalized elites. Those are other indicators we have. So even though a repressive regime may bring, let's say, calm to a situation in which there is an active fighting, there are other forms of violence and repression where they would have been rated not very well.
What about environmental factors? Is there a strong correlation between stability and environmental stability?
Well, there seems to be, and we have an indicator which we call demographic pressures, where we do factor in environmental factors. For example, the tsunami, which is a terrible kind of incident for any state, but for a weak state, it is catastrophic. But oddly enough, there is resilience even in some of these states. For example, Indonesia, just a year after the tsunami, has recovered and improved. So that's a situation where international assistance helped a lot of weak states get back on their feet, and in some cases had a good impact. In other cases, it did not. Bickering occurred in some countries between the government and rebels, even over the distribution of the assistance, and deepened the conflict.
Do you think we'll see a number of failed states, or the number of failed states, grow as the Earth's climate changes, as a result of climate change?
A lot of people are predicting that, including the UN Secretary General. Africa, for example, is the most conflicted continent in the world now. Scientists are forecasting that it would be one of the most heavily impacted with climate change as desertification increases, lack of food supply comes on board, and Africa is not going to be in a position to cope well with these kinds of climate change impacts that they're going to be dealing with.
On the world map that shows where failed states are, it's clear that certain failed states and endangered states are clustered together. Is there a domino effect?
There is a spillover effect, and that comes from refugees, rebels, affinity groups, for example, ethnic groups that may live on two sides of a border, and also economic impact that comes from a failed state. A failed state, by definition, can't contain its own borders. And even if it could, these are the kinds of phenomena which don't respect borders. So the spillover effect is in the first instance on neighboring states. But as you said in your opening remarks, it can affect countries halfway around the world. For example, in the Niger Delta in Nigeria, you have a rebel group in the oil-producing area. And every now and then they'll make a threat, or they'll take hostages or do something, and that will affect the oil prices around the world.
But thinking about neighboring states, also in the top 10 failed states are neighbors of Sudan, Chad, and the Central African Republic. And it's interesting considering how chaos spreads from country to country, but would Chad and the Central African Republic be on the list if not for the failure of Sudan? Because they have been overrun with refugees from Sudan, and that has kind of spread the fighting as well.
They would probably still be on the list because they're both very weak states, very poor governance. But what happens is that when the refugees and the rebels cross over the borders, and that's happened in both instances in the Central African Republic and Chad, their scores actually worsen. The situation becomes far worse, and both countries are in very bad shape.
One of the big surprises for me in your list is the 12th state that's pretty high up, Pakistan. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that Pakistan, despite its problems, would have been in better shape than North Korea, which follows it, or Burma, or Bangladesh, or Ethiopia, or Nepal, Uzbekistan, Sierra Leone, a lot of countries that follow it.
Again, every country's profile is different. Pakistan, in fact, even has been doing very well economically, but the strength that Pakistan has is outweighed by the liabilities that it is facing now, which is a not very popular government, a lot of territory over which the government has no control in the northwest areas and Baluchistan, of course the presence of Al-Qaeda, the cross-border operations with Afghanistan, and the fragmentation of the security forces. These are very deep-seated problems in Pakistan, and it's a very, very dangerous situation.
I talked about clusters of instability, but there seem to be clusters of stability as well. For example, Scandinavia. Can stability spread from state to state the same way that chaos and violence can?
That's a very interesting question. I don't think the stability is as immediate, but surely a country which lives in a stable neighborhood has a better chance of standing on its own 2 feet and improving.
Well, for example, Mongolia, according to your index, is a sea of stability in Asia, but all of its border states seem to be relatively in danger.
That's right. Another good example is Botswana, which has always been a stable state, fairly stable state, even during the 80s and 90s when there were wars occurring all over it in southern Africa and apartheid was at its height. But it became a sea of instability. These countries usually have fairly good governance, small populations, and a good economic base.
Now, there seems to be another economic imperative here, and I mean economic, geographic, and that is that most of the unstable states, the failed or endangered states, seem to be clustered around the equator. And most of the stable states, there are exceptions, are in the northern or southern extremes of the globe.
Well, that goes back to your point about climate change and environment. I think certainly the deck is stacked against those countries which live in the hot zones, which also tend to be disease-prone states, states that don't necessarily have very advanced agricultural systems, and they're dealing with a greater set of problems.
We talked earlier about states being improved, for example, Liberia. But Liberia is still on the list on the top 60. And I imagine it's going to take a long time for a country that's gone through such turmoil to get off this list.
Yes, but the important point is to see what the trajectory and the trend line is. States that have been in real conflict and have been shattered and have, like Liberia, terrible, brutal civil wars show that basically it's much easier to destroy than to build. And so when we do get success stories like Liberia, I think the international community should take advantage of that and give as much help and support as possible for states that are on the mend. And again, Liberia faces a very uphill battle because its economy was destroyed. It lives in a dangerous neighborhood with a lot of states that are weak surrounding it. A lot of the problems of countries that are coming out of internal wars are problems like unemployment, where you have a lot of youth who'd have no jobs. The educational systems have been destroyed. These are things that can be remedied, but it takes time.
Once a state is labeled as failed, what are the political implications? Will other countries start to deal differently with it? Can being labeled a failed state be harmful in that it might help a struggling state further along in a downward spiral?
It depends upon what the country does with the label or how it reacts to the measurements. We have found that some states are quite responsible and find that this is a way where they can manage their problems better by talking about how to get improved scores. And, for example, if they did poorly on political legitimacy, they could take steps to get more political legitimacy through better elections, through anti-corruption efforts, things like that. So it depends upon what you do. You can't manage a problem until you measure it, and suppressing information is not going to help countries recover.
Well, it sounds to me like once, as you said, a state starts failing, it's pretty easy to keep on going to getting worse and worse. But what about going from stability to failure? Would it take a lot to turn Norway into a failed state?
I think it would take a great deal because they have very well-established values, norms, identification as a society, and institutions. So countries, for example, that have strong institutions but get a bad leader, let's say, or a poor leader at one point, generally can survive that and get through without major disasters. Even the United States has had some rocky roads in the past to traverse, and yet has been strengthened by some of these crises that we went through. Look at Watergate. Remember Watergate, where basically a president had to resign. Look at the way we handled the 2000 elections, which were quite controversial, with hanging chads and disenfranchised voters in Florida. That kind of conflict, that kind of political crisis in a weak state would often lead to a military coup or to fighting in the streets. So how countries deal with internal crises is a measure of their resiliency and their strength, and basically leads to the definition of a strong state. So it would be very hard for a country like Norway now, that has such well-established institutions and traditions, to really turn around and become a failed state, unless there was a devastating attack on Norway or a disease or something that of really catastrophic proportions.
Now, what is the ultimate use of this index, other than looking at how terrible, what terrible shape so many countries are in? Has this been used over the last few years for any kind of implementation of policy?
I think it has, in current terms of the feedback that we're getting. And, of course, a lot of other organizations have their own lists as well. But we are totally independent, and therefore the kind of index that we issue is basically without any particular partisan interest in mind or favoritism in mind, and it doesn't have a government behind it or anything like that. The value of it, of course, is to be able to diagnose problems in the world and diagnose them in a way that you can track recovery, identify problems, and get remedial action. It's kind of an early warning tool.
But one of the things that I've learned from our conversation is that mobility on the failed state list is difficult. Once a state has failed, it's hard to drag it out again, and vice versa. A successful one is likely to stay that way.
Well, but mobility is a relative thing, and failure is a dynamic thing, too. Basically, we don't ever say this state is failed. Again, it's a continuum, and we're measuring risk of failure. So you have possible mobility, as in Indonesia, Liberia, a lot of other countries which actually improved over the years and at a fairly substantial rate. So you're never fixed in any one area. No condition is permanent. Stable states can have setbacks, and unstable states, if you get the right combination, can actually make great leaps forwards. I think the thing that you should take away from this is the fact that it is flexible and that there's always hope for change if you have correct diagnosis and correct remedies.
Pauline H. Baker is president of the nonprofit The Fund for Peace, which, in conjunction with Foreign Policy Magazine, has just published the third annual Failed States Index. And I'm very thankful that she talked with me today on my show.
Thank you. And if anybody wants more information, they can come to our website, which is www.fundforpeace.org. We've got rankings for 177 countries.
And you can also find a link to that on our show page at wnyc.org. Thanks again.
Thank you.